And so it was that those long sea journeys became yonder awa awa. So it was that the rum came to be from yonder awa awa. And the black ants lifting heavy load in that heathen land became yonder awa awa. Till your memory grew awa awa. Till that Duncan rebel was said to have been taken awa awa. And Uncle Colin caught fever, so his mind run awa. Place where Father Callum run go fling words like Scotch bonnet by cane fields and start baptize sinners in local muddy water awa awa.
Hello and welcome to Who Owns the Clyde? This is the first episode in a podcast from the Empire Cafe. My name's Louise Welsh and I'm a crime writer.
And I'm Jude Barber, an architect. And together we're carrying out a citizen investigation into who owns the River Clyde, Glasgow in Scotland. So let's take you back to where it all began.
We're sitting by the Clyde right now, and you look at it, it's a beautiful day, it's a little bit breezy, we're a wee bit chilly, but the sky is blue, the water is blue, and it's a broad river at this point. We're sitting at Govan. It feels like this was always here, it was always like that. If we stop for a second...
There are no boats moving, for
there's
example.
Nothing. There's two very beautiful swans, gliding swan-like. Along, and in the distance we can see the expressway and the cars, you know, whizzing by, and behind us there's some new housing getting built, but nothing, absolutely zero, is happening on the water. And this is the question that we have: why is nothing happening on the water? Why are there no paddle boarders? Why are there no wee boats going up and down? Why is the freight moving not by water as it has done since Neolithic times around Scotland? Why is it all on the road? You know, why are we subject to these traffic fumes when something else could be happening and, via the waterway?
And also what's really apparent as well is the extent of vacant land, you know, vacant and derelict land that we see around us here. Despite some great efforts, you know, you can see the Transport Museum there, this, you know, fabulous cultural building that's free for us to walk into and explore our history in terms of like transportation and movement. But, you know, we can also see these enormous gap sites, and you're asking yourself, well, why has nothing happened there? Why are those not developed, you know?
Why isn't it joined up?
Of course, we don't have all the answers, but we did go to the River Clyde to talk to others who could shed some light on the questions that we have.
Somebody who was a great help to us was Councillor Graham Campbell, a veteran political campaigner who's been working on the subject of Scotland and Empire for decades now. Graham's the representative for Springburn and Rob Royston, and he also helped us a lot with his expertise when we were doing the Empire Cafe. You will hear more about that subject later.
As the chair of the Slavery and Colonial Legacy Working Group, I would say this, wouldn't I? But obviously Glasgow is here because of the Clyde. It's here because of the west facing to North America and the West Indies. It's here because of that. It's a port because of that. It's a big city because of this river. This is the river that all those goods came in from, and also all those Scots people went out from. But as I suppose in everywhere across the world, the sea is, rather being a barrier that cuts you off, the sea is the gateway. It's the transport system. It's the way goods are carried. It's the way trade and relationships between people are kept. So Glasgow had this relationship with, especially with Northern Europe. You know, we had a lot of connection with the Baltic, with Russia even. You know, and those links and those trading links are what allowed Glaswegians to monopolise the tobacco market in Europe and give smoking habits to all of those people who smoked today in Eastern Europe. You know, that's our legacy. Great, you know, lung cancer and slavery. It doesn't scan well as the picture we present of ourselves, of the Clyde and the Glorious Empire and the shipbuilding. The expression copper bottomed comes from here. the idea of copper bottoming your boat so they can run a blockade faster, which the Americans, the anti-slavery Americans, were trying to stop the South from trading. And what were we doing? We were helping the South trade its cotton for our mills. You know, all the industries that we pride ourselves on, whether it's everything from rope making to sail making to sugar, tobacco, warehousing, the whole concept of warehousing, that whole system was created by Scots in that triangular trade with Glasgow as one of the points of the triangle. For me, the Clyde is a memorial place as much as a sort of tourism-y place. To me, it's not a tourism-y place.
We opened this podcast with Malaika Booker reading an extract from her poem Yonder Awa, which we commissioned for the Empire Cafe back in 2014. So what was the Empire Cafe?
I think this podcast, Who Owns the Clyde, comes out of a project that we did a decade ago in 2014 during the Commonwealth Games, when the Commonwealth Games came to Glasgow. And it was a point of great celebration. People were really pleased and proud to have that event in the city. But we also were aware of the history of the Games. The Commonwealth Games used to be called the Empire Games. And we made a thing called the Empire Cafe to explore Scotland's relationship with the North Atlantic slave trade, that horrible history of empire.
You know, our tagline was a welcome discussion. It was a really important to have a frank discussion about this together. And we brought a variety of people together, didn't we, that had been working in and around this topic from a variety of disciplines.
And it was a welcome discussion, you know, because we wondered, would people be angry? This was meant to be a celebration of the games, and here we were looking at a really horrible history. And people weren't angry, or maybe they were. What they were angry about was, why was I not taught this in school? A lot has happened regarding that history in the decades since. And we didn't have the answers, we didn't have the knowledge, but what we did have were the questions.
One of the things we learned from the Empire Cafe was just how central the River Clyde was to the city's evolution, its imperial history and its industrial past. In the past few years, I've been working with colleagues, the council and Govan Housing Association to develop new housing there at a key site opposite the Transport Museum. So Louise and myself went down to that spot on the Clyde side at Govan to reflect on how it looks today and how that contrasts with other times in its history.
We're down on the banks of the Clyde here. We're sitting on the walkway at Govan, immediately adjacent to Water Row, one of the most historic places actually in the city where Vikings arrived in days gone by. And it really is a patchwork, isn't it?
Yeah.
Different buildings, spaces and landscapes. So we're seeing across the road is the Transport Museum by Zaha Hadid architects, built by the city, where everyone can go freely in and explore the culture of transport in Glasgow and indeed Scotland.
And there used to be a little ferry that went across there, because, you know, we're sitting here, we can see it. It's so close, you almost feel that you could touch the Transport Museum. But to get there is a bit of a palaver. We're near an underground, but the underground doesn't really go close to there. We're near bus stops, but I don't think you can get a direct bus to there.
When we see things that aren't working for our city, often the tendency is to ask why our council hasn't sorted this out, because after all, we've voted them into power to act on our behalf.
So we spoke to the leader of Glasgow City Council, Councillor Susan Aitken, who's very open with us. And you'll hear her voice throughout this episode and podcast.
I mean, the Clyde made Glasgow to a huge degree, and it should be at the heart of the city. It is physically at the heart of the city, but it's not. Citizens are disconnected from it. There are sections where you can walk along, but then it gets broken up. And it's really, the city doesn't face the river and coalesce around the river in the way that we should. And in the way that would usually happen, where you had this incredible, you know, geographical feature slap bang in the middle of your city.
There is a bridge being built, which was due to be finished this spring, but I think is going to be a little bit longer. So for the moment, for the residents here, it's a real traipse. They've got the view of the Transport Museum, but their children will have a big journey to get there.
When this bridge comes in, it will be transformation. It's going
it'll
to connect Partick in the West End to Govan here and connect over to Bella Houston. So it's a major bit of infrastructure and thinking in the city about how we make these connections across our river, which is such a central part
and it's
of
a
our
very
city.
Positive move. Can you look down to our right, down the river towards the west? You see the old Port Authority building, that sort of Italianate tower, and beyond that the Squinty Bridge that anyone that watches the Scottish news will be familiar with. That you often see it in the background, and the Armadillo and the Science Centre, which is like a little enclave at what used to be called Plantation Quay but is now what's it called?
Just refer to the SECC.
SECC, where the BBC and STV and all of these big buildings are. And again, nothing much there. You know, there's
nothing in between. I mean, what we're seeing as well are these massive gap sites, vacant and derelict land, spanning, you know, between these kind of major cultural centres, but large areas of land with pockets of kind of housing in between, like social housing in between that's been built. And then in the distance, when we look further out beyond the river, we can see Glasgow Harbour, a major kind of development that was built, private development built in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s.
So it isn't news to anybody that nothing much is happening on the Clyde. It's an untapped resource. It's got so much potential, and it's just a terrible, terrible waste, and has been for decades and decades and decades. Jude, you're an architect, you're working on the Clyde side. Surely there must be some strategies to join up this lack of joined up infrastructure and spaces.
Oh, there are many, many visions and strategies for the Clyde, and student projects as well that have looked at things like bringing water taxis along the length of the Clyde, thinking about mixed-use development, thinking about how we might bring industry back. And the city plan itself has the Clyde as one of its six strategic projects. We've also got things like the Clyde Mission, led by the Scottish Government, which looks at how the Clyde might become productive and socially sustainable. We've got the Clyde Metro, looking at how we might think about movement in different ways. And the Clyde plan itself, which brings together eight local authorities, all spanning the length of the River Clyde. But for some reason, these strategies aren't fully happening. And just to add to that, there's also the National Planning Framework 4, which identifies the Clyde as one of the key priority projects, not just for Glasgow, but for the whole country.
Jude, you've spoken to me about how doing nothing also costs money in terms of climate change, in terms of infrastructure. The will is there, the need is there, the vision is there, the strategies are there. So what exactly is the problem?
We've never quite really found a use for the Clyde since the deindustrialisation of the city, when, you know, it was a big great industrial river that passed. We were left with a legacy, a post-industrial legacy that we still live with today in Glasgow, which is brutal and has blighted lives and life opportunities for a long time.
Like Susan Aitken, we're interested in who owns the Clyde. And our original plan wasn't to create a podcast, it was to map the ownership of the Clyde, and by that we mean its banks, its riverbed, the air above and the land on either side. Bit by bit, we wanted to learn who does actually own what, and make that a clear and public record that we could share with other citizens. So what happened to our very simple plan, Jude?
Well, it wasn't straightforward at all. In fact, it was really complicated, and it's fair to say we ran aground. But what we found out, and perhaps had indeed suspected, was that there's real opacity around land ownership and rights in Scotland, and indeed across the UK.
I think it's fair to say it's murky.
It certainly is. And how can a city plan for its future if it doesn't fully know who owns what?
So in our initial investigation into who owns the Clyde, we worked alongside a researcher, Caitlin Arbuckle-McLeod, to map the key sites, and Caitlin pretty quickly came up against some significant obstacles.